Thank you. I guess the scale that I'm going to be talking about might be best described as a plot scale. Quite a bit different, maybe an order of 10 meters sort of a scale. The figure behind the title slide here is just a Google Earth image of an Australian vertisol showing one of the striking features, the most striking features that you can see from aerial images, and those are gilgai. My understanding, the word gilgai means essentially water puddle in Australian Aborigine. So this shows a little better where the features got their name. They're naturally occurring depressions in vertisols that form as a result of complex soil dynamics, and that's about as far as everybody is willing to go as far as agreement of how these things form. They're natural and they occur as a result of the processes in the soil. The other feature, sort of a definitive feature of vertisols, are cracks. The cracks form as a result of contraction or shrinking during dry spells. They are centimeters sometimes wide and extend a meter or more deep and are persistent for a large part of the year. And that changes the hydrology of the soils markedly. It allows the water to penetrate deeply into the soil quickly. It wets the zones down to a meter deep in just a matter of days and allows the near surface to dry out rapidly, sometimes cycling many times after every good rain. And somehow, that process, combining with the shrink swell potential of the soil, results in the formation of gilgai. I've kind of sort of cartooned that process in here. And what we'd like to do is understand how that works, and it's clear that the key to that is understanding how moisture moves through these kinds of soils. And so for the past 5 years or so, a little group at Baylor University has been working with the geoelectrical imaging. Sometimes it's called electrical resistivity imaging, ERI, it's known by various names. And the idea is that it's a geophysical technique, one of the older ones. You inject a direct current between two source electrodes, and that sets up an electric field of currents in red that flow between positive and negative poles. And then at several locations, sometimes as many as eight locations, you measure the voltage, the electrical potential between two receiver electrodes. And from that, you can reconstruct an image, a tomographic image of the variation in resistivity with depth and spatially, and it's kind of handy. These are normally set up, the theory is normally set up for a continuum, but in the case of cracks, the method still works. It distorts the flow lines of the currents, so they have to take a circuitous route around the cracks, and as a result, that manifests itself as a change in potential at the surface, and it makes the zone appear as a hyper-resistivity zone, so small areas of anomalously high resistivity or sort of how cracks are reflected in this method. So it makes a pretty good non-invasive technique to study vertisols. You don't want to tear up the soil investigating it. So modern systems consists of dozens of electrodes spaced along the ground, usually in a line connected by a cable, which is connected to a computer-controlled device that automatically goes through a pre-program of measurements that allow you to accurately reproduce profiles time and time again, which would be difficult if you were trying to do that manually. So that makes it much easier. You couldn't do a lot of these things. We're doing these studies at the USDA grasslands site, research site. It's about halfway between Dallas, or centrally located between Dallas, Houston, and San Antonio. It's a real good example of a vertisol. And to associate our resistivity data back to soil moisture, we calibrate, we take samples, rather large samples in the field from various places in the gilgai structure, and then watch these things dry out and measure resistivity in the lab. And that allows us to make a sort of a transfer function between resistivity and soil moisture. And you'll notice for the different sites in the gilgai, because you have different lithologies, slightly different lithologies, there's actually a spread of relationships, but it's not too great. And so we use one transfer function for the whole the whole site is a good way to go. This is sort of a summary of some work we'd started back in 2005. It was published, Skuru Amadou was a graduate student of mine that published his work in Vedic Zone in 2007. And these are examples of cross sections. These are 17 meters long, and these are repeated. We did about 30 repeats of these from May to November in 2005. I'm going to show you just a few of them. And what you see starting on May 19th, is a superficial layer that's relatively dry, down to something like 40 to 50 centimeters. This is the scale down here. So blue colors are relatively saturated or wet, and the warmer colors are relatively dry in this scale. So you see little localized anomalies associated with cracks that are forming on the flanks of this microlow and at various places. And this is a sort of what appears to be a continuous wet zone below about 50 centimeters. And then through the summer, we had periodic rains, a relatively wet summer 2005, and the superficial layer would wet and dry with each one of these rains. And this wet zone would progressively dry it out during the summer. But even at the end of the summer, in the microlows, you had this residual moist areas that persisted the whole summer. And then things changed in August. Notice this date, August 5, because a week later we had several inches of rain, and the entire soil layer down to about 1.2 meters was re-wetted. Okay, so it happens very quickly through those open cracks. And then during the fall, it repeated the process where you had cyclic rains and drying in the near surface and a progressive drying of this deeper zone with residual moisture there and during the microlows. And so it's doing the same thing. So the conclusions we took from this initial study was that the patterns, you get a rapid period of recharge in the soil down to about 1.2 meters where it's essentially saturated in maybe a matter of a week or so with heavy rains. And then during normal times where you have periodic rains that are sort of 1 inch and less, you have this highly dynamic shallow layer that repeatedly dries and wets down to about a half a meter. And then below that, there's a sort of a sandwiched wet layer between a half a meter and a meter that stays pretty moist the whole time, but progressively, during a drying cycle, progressively dries out, leaving persistent moisture zone pockets in the microlows. Now, with all research, you end up with questions. And the question that we had is, how much of a general case was this? This was sort of an unusually wet summer for us in Texas. We had probably about 5-6 inches of rain, something like that during the summer, maybe more. We had an unusually dry fall, and so that was kind of unusual. And so how representative are these results? The other thing is that we're interested in recharge to the groundwater. This site sits on the top of a hill, and we have a groundwater monitoring station just 10 meters to the side of the site, and we can see the water level jump up after every rain. And we didn't see any clear evidence with our shallow profiles of where this water was making its way through the soil. And then, obviously, this is a 3D problem. The gill guy are maybe 2 meters in diameter on average, and we were profiling down to over a meter. And the 2D assumption is a pretty gross approximation at that scale. And so how is that affecting us? And so we spent the last couple of years working on acquiring new equipment and getting scaled up to do 3D surveys. And so we started back at this this summer. And the 3D acquisition for the resistivity method is done similarly. You set up a grid, though, instead of a profile. And then you just march your electrodes across the profile. I could make a movie of that, but it'd be get kind of like watching the grass grow. You sort of raster a volume. And so let me go back one. Let's see, backwards would be like, let's see, how does one go back? Right mouse, try right mouse. Oh, that's good. That worked. Okay, we ended up with a volume that was 27 and a half meters long and 12 meters wide. And we're profiling now down to about 3.6 meters. The scales are over here. It's a little confusing. But this height is about 3.6 meters. It takes about 8 hours to do the data collection and about 24 hours to do the 3D inversion. The main difference is you have an algorithm that accounts for the full volume of data as it's doing processing. And right away, this was done in July after a relatively dry summer, sort of normal conditions, unusually normal conditions for Texas. And what we see is the same pattern. You can see down into the volume on this side here where you have these little high spots. Those would be the fractures. And then periodically you have residual moisture. And so that's the same patterns Amadou saw in his 2005 study. However, we see all this interesting variation below the 1.2 meter interval that show these really hyper-resistivity zones in the zone. We don't really have any mechanism to explain that in an intact soil. So it has to be associated with some sort of macro porosity. And also you see these striation patterns on the surface. Here's one going back. These are the fractures. And you notice if you look at these closely, some of these fractures extend 3 or 4 meters across, some of them less. They're all preferentially oriented downslope, interestingly enough. The geologic dip of the underlying Taylor Morrill is approximately that direction, but the local slope is that direction. So one of the beauties of this is that you can section it up and look inside the volume. And so these are cross sections. This is parallel to the x-axis at different distances into the volume, like this is 4, 6, and 8 meters. And you see this these bright resistivity zones here are correspond to fractures that are probably still open. And so that makes that. And then beneath them, at various places of the microlow, you still see these persistent moist zones. But interestingly enough, you go deeper, you see pockets of deep moisture that we didn't know about. And there's these interesting patterns of, slicken sides or open fractures or whatever that's causing that. Also, this is something we were looking for, a connection between the residual moisture in a microlow and the deeper part of the section. So this is a candidate for possible recharge conduit. So it looks a lot like what Amadou got, but with the interesting information, additional information. Now this is a horizontal section at 2.5 meters through the same data volume. And it shows some interesting patterns. This is that vertical conduit cut down at 2.5 meters. It's about a meter across here. It's smaller if you go to a shallower depth. You couldn't image this with a 2D cross section across here because these regions of high and low resistivity would blur in a 2D profile and you just get a homogeneous layer. So that's kind of an unusual situation. This is what the deep moisture pocket looked like, and notice it's surrounded by these interesting pattern of high resistivity that wraps around. I want you to notice, just keep in mind this triple junction of high resistivity right in the center of the surface expression of this large gill guy. I'll show it to you in a minute in a different form. We repeated this after 270 millimeters of rain. We've had an unusually wet fall. We've had several 100 millimeter rains, one after another. And you can see here the superficial wetting down to about a half a meter or a little more, something like that. And if you look into this volume, you see an interesting pattern where you have a wet zone underlined by a dry zone, like we saw in Amadou's work, but interestingly enough, it's underlain deeper than we were able to see before by another wet and dry zone. So there's like a stacked section of wetting and drying. And this superficial layer, this second layer lines up with where we saw those bright red zones before. So once you get that water in there, it's traveling horizontally through the bright red zones. And notice this little tip here. I'll show you that again in a minute, a different section. Okay, so now I repeated this about a week and a half ago, and another bunch of rain has fallen since then. It's been a very, very wet fall, and now it's almost all wet with some just a little bitty residual dry zones. And so here what you see, that little zone that we showed was sort of an incipient tail down is now fully saturated, and so that looks like a conduit to the subsurface. There's another one that appears to be forming further over here, about 8, and I'll show you where that occurs. If you take the section through the horizontal section, this little moist area that I just pointed to at the, last time, it happens where that triple junction in the dry zones occurred at the last the first section that I showed you. And here's this recharge zone straddled by these two bright zones. So very interesting, a lot of interesting things. These surface expressions, what we're seeing is there's some alignment with depth and some things that are happening that are not aligned with the surface expression of the Gilgai. So what we conclude from this is that some of what Amadou concluded was valid. It seems like that the soil moisture persists underneath the microlows after months of drying, and probably is perennial. You know, it as near as we can tell. We saw rapid infiltration, just like Sukuru did, but we see a stacked result where you have wet-dry, so it's a two-layer system instead of a one-layer system. And we see deep recharge through these really small vertical conduits that are probably on the scale less than a meter. And they're not at every, they tend to be on the flanks of the micro lows, or, you know, or the micro highs, sort of the intermediate zones. But not every one appears. It seems like they come periodically. So that's kind of what we conclude. Thank you. Right. It's during the summer, the grass, it's just grassland, and it hasn't been grazed this summer, and so that's currently, when we first started, it was pretty much dormant because it had been dry, and it's picked up. And so in that shallow, particularly that shallow top 50 centimeters, the grass kicking on and pulling that water out will influence the withdrawal. That's right. Well, we can see the effect of it. We can see that it doesn't happen in the winter, and it does happen, and, you know, it's there. Yeah, it's part of it, yeah. It's hard to separate it out. We don't, because it is hotter, too, and so you get more just evaporation but through the cracks, but it is definitely that grass. We see it in the spring when the grasses pick up, it really draws it down, yeah. The way the inversion works is it sets up a grid of finite elements, and it solves the problem where it adjusts those resistivities to match the observation. And so the result is not a unique solution, but it is a solution, a vertical and horizontal, and in this case, a volume distribution that explains the data to minimum. You know, it's the smoothest solution possible, and so the depth of investigation is a sort of an artifact of the sensitivity of those elements to changes in resistivity. In other words, it's a pretty hard answer, you know. It's a volume sensitive thing, and so it's not quite like a GPR. It's not quite as easy. In other words, the measurement that you make it is an integral of everything it passes through, and so it's a little more difficult than that.
Our next speaker is Tikali Dinka from Texas A&M University, also talking about vertisols.